Education Conversations.
Let's welcome our A-team guest, Professor Kwandile Kondlo, who's a political analyst. Professor, thank you very much for joining us. Good evening.
Good evening. Yes, my name is Kwandile Kondlo, not Kwandile, Kwandile.
Thank you very much for correcting that.
I'm a professor at Wits. I'm not a political analyst.
Amandla, if I am to wring someone's neck, it is yours. Everything you have given me is incorrect. I apologize for that, Prof. I was taken from what I've been given by my producer. But yeah, let's start on a better note. Ngiyabonga kakhulu for the correction. You've also got on the panel Tessa Drooms, who is a director at Rivonia Circle. Tessa, thank you very much for joining us. Tessa, are you there?
Yes.
Okay, excellent. Tessa, good evening. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So we are talking political influence and political factors. I'm going to start with you, Prof. Prof, there's going to be, we're examining, right, the benefits and pros and cons, maybe, let me put it that way, of having the ANC as the ruling party currently. And especially now that we have heard that the current president of the ANC and of our country, President Cyril Ramaphosa, is being considered for a second term, and knowing very well the historical muscle that the ANC has in South Africa post-democracy and prior to democracy. So talk to us about what can be anticipated here.
What can be anticipated? I would say, really, we may anticipate, in fact, that it would make sense to anticipate the usual, you see, because we don't have any remarkable changes in terms of laws and legislation to change the situation remarkably. And secondly, if you look at, I would call it the dimension of ground. That is, if you look at ordinary people on the ground, ordinary men and women in the various communities, the concerns have not really changed from what we've seen previously. Their expectations from government, their expectations from the ANC, those who vote for the ANC, it's all around bread and butter issues. Yeah? It's all around concrete deliverables to help improve their conditions. So in the coming elections, I'm not expecting anything radical except that what is now happening is that in many communities, the ANC is being seriously questioned. The leadership, the direction, the sincerity of the African National Congress. It's not only questioned by analysts and professors and media people. Ordinary communities, I come from villages myself, ordinary communities, they talk there. The tone has changed. They are seriously questioning the ANC's sincerity and its ability to uplift society.
But in the same vein, I mean, those communities that are questioning, do they hold the numbers to make a change, or is it just questioning and still will vote based on sentiment? Because I see from reports when the president, Cyril Ramaphosa, went to Shawelo in Soweto, he was endorsed there. I mean, and Shawelo is facing a lot of service delivery issues, from water to electricity and the likes. And it's also reported that other provinces like Limpopo, Eastern Cape and Mpumalanga, the Free State and the Western Cape, are also, like, you know, quite much pushing towards Cyril Ramaphosa, meaning they're pushing towards the ANC-led government as well.
Yeah, but they are not voting as yet. Yeah? They are pushing by word of mouth.
Okay. Do you feel that the push might be different?
Voting at the poll is a completely different affair, you see. And this is actually the time, the coming election, 2024, that we need to observe the trend very carefully. Because all along what we've seen is that the support base for the ruling African National Congress is thinning, it's getting smaller, it's reducing. Let's see in the coming elections in 2024 how far down, because it's been going down, how far down this is going to go, and what implications does it have for the configuration of the political landscape after the elections.
I'm going to come to you, Tessa, in terms of what it informs voter registration and voters, you know, actual mark on the ballot paper. What informs that decision?
Well, in the main,
I'm coming to Tessa, Prof.
Okay, sure.
Thank you.
So in the main, it's informed by three factors. The first, whether or not practice is
an example, and something that is easy to do. Tessa, your line is really horrible. I can't hear a word you're saying. I'm going to ask Amandla to see if we can't get you a better line. Hopefully it's not due to load shedding, so that we can be able to have a good conversation with you. A-teamers, we are talking about, you know, factors that are influencing decisions to keep political parties, and also what informs you as the electorate, as the voter, to keep voting for a specific party or to change your vote. What is it that could possibly happen in 2024? That's the discussion. 0614-104-107. That is the WhatsApp number. Please do send me your voice notes and your messages to comment on this, or you can call in studio on 086-000-2032. Let's go back to Tessa. Your line is a bit better now, Tessa. Please do respond.
So I'm saying it's informed really by three main things. One of them is the accessibility of voting. So we take for granted that you know, voting stations are everywhere and people can access them easily, but we forget about the fact that for some people in rural and very urban areas, voting stations may be far away in terms of transport, maybe something that's hard to get to in terms of people having to work on that day, because we know now how public holidays work, but also just the registration and the migration patterns in the country. So often people are registered in places where they don't reside. So you have disaffected people who are not willing to go through all of the processes to get registered and all of that and make sure they're in the right place in the right time and they have time to vote. But the more important two are around the voting psyche. One of those things is the options on the ballot. And people are really discouraged by the options on the ballot. People feel like most of the options are either more of the same in terms of the big political parties who've had an opportunity to engage in the political space but haven't delivered much, or they're just parties that people don't know and aren't familiar with and don't engage. And so you have many people who say, I've never actually interacted directly with a political party that's trying to get my vote. And so you just have a disaffected and no trust in the options that are on the ballot. But the bigger one is the idea that people have lost faith in the meaning of the vote and the power of the vote. People don't believe their vote is meaningfully going to change things. And so what you've had in the last few years is a big opting out of the process of voting. Voter non-participation, where people are actively saying either the options are not great, it's not worth the effort, and particularly that the idea of when I put my vote there, it's simply not going to change things. I'm not going to be able to hold people directly accountable, and all I'm doing is giving that power to people who have no regard for me afterwards.
I'm going to have to go to the lines. I've got Anonymous A-teamer on the line. Good evening, Anonymous.
Good evening, Patricia, and good evening to your guests as well.
Good evening, yeah?
Yes. Thank you for a beautiful subject. I do think that we are sitting in a very deep pick the electorate in South Africa. I just got one example. My daughter was asking me the other day and saying, pointing to a cousin of mine who has been really messed up by this political setting. The guy works for as a senior person within government, but he's run from one difficulty to the other with the political establishment. And here is the question that my daughter was asking, to say, Daddy, if this government, this ANC that you've been voting for, is doing exactly these things to you, what about us who are born free? What reason do we have to vote for the ANC, for instance? This is born free, as I'm saying, just starting to work. And obviously, she's got a whole lot of other friends that I think feel the same. And that is the dilemma that the ANC is faced with. I do not think that the DA is any better, if you ask me, because this privatization and all those policies that are neoliberal are pushing the marginalized to an extent where they must pay for everything. So what of this developmental mandate is left then in that instance? And that is the reason I'm saying we are sitting in a pickle as the electorate. Thank you.
Sure, Anonymous. Thank you for sharing that experience. Definitely a pickle, I see. I'm coming to you, Prof. I mean, hearing what Gwandile has said, hearing what Anonymous caller has said, what are your thoughts on how we could better involve politically and socially and economically the born frees, as we so call them? How can we get them to be enticed to know more about each and every political party so that they can make an informed decision?
You're referring, you're talking to me on this one.
Yes, Prof.
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure, because one of the major, I would say it's a major problem, if you look at some, if you compare South Africa with some Latin American countries like Brazil and even Cuba and other countries. If you compare South Africa with those in India, South Africa is very weak on public education. You see?
Mm-hmm.
Public education, other people, they call it civic education. But mass public education initiatives that you see in some parts of India and even Brazil, you hardly find them. I've never heard of them in South Africa. In other words, it means our democracy is not dialogic enough to reach down to the wretched of the earth. I'm not even talking about the born free. Talk about ordinary cities.
Mm.
But when it comes to the younger generation, it's becoming very important that we start political debate and education at home, where you sit with teenagers in your own house, and start debating thematic issues emerging from development in political society. You see, that's part of the things I actually do, just sitting and chatting with my children. I think it starts there before they even go out to meet with their own colleagues at schools, in churches, and so forth. But I think this is a very important thing. We need to stand up and see it through as parents, as brothers, as mothers and fathers. So that, because you see, when you talk democracy, democracy is not just about a government system. Democracy is about how you relate with your children, how you relate with your partner, you see, the kind of engagement, positive engagement, that you do with people close to you. That's where democracy begins. This thing must begin with us personally,
at
our home.
Let me go to a voice note before we quickly wrap up our conversation.
Of course, votes and voting for parties goes with history, especially with liberation movement. Family members have gone to exile, they fought for that. Relatives were in the struggle. Children, when they grow up, they were throwing stones at the Melo Yellows. Hence, the support for the ANC as the leader of the liberation in the country. Now people are voting because of the sentiment. Slowly but surely, when the ANC does not deliver, people will vote otherwise. But the falling will not be at a crash. It will be steadily but surely. The same way with the DA and the EFF. If you look, the new party come out of the ANC, it will garner some few votes. Thereafter, its increase will be curtailed down and very slow, or to die like Hope did. Bole in Polokwane.
Thank you very much, Atima in Polokwane, for that message. Let's round off our conversation. Tessa, what are your closing comments?
I think that we mustn't think about the ANC support and continued support as something that's representative of society. We must realize that only a third of the population is continuing to vote at this point. Based on the last election, only 12 million out of 40 million eligible people actually showed up. So we're basing continued support of the ANC actually on a much smaller number of people than we used to see in the past. And that we must take into consideration. So where does the opportunity lie? It lies in people who have become disenfranchised from the system, or in the born free generation who have not plugged into their vote because they don't see the value thereof. And so we're doing work that says, number one, we need to increase people's sense of why their vote matters. We need people to understand that they have the ability not only to vote for people to be in power, but they have the ability to interact with those people and interact with the laws and interact with the policies after the vote is done. And that gives people a greater stake. We also need to think about electoral reforms that give people a sense that they can directly vote for people. Right now we have an electoral reform bill that's in parliament where it's a pseudo adding of independent candidates, but there's an opportunity being missed here to really reform the electoral process so that people know who they're voting for and they feel like they can better recall, hold accountable the people that they vote for. But I think what Prof said can't be minimized. We need to start in society asking each other, how are we going to start doing this outside of the political party landscape? It's not, you know, in 1994, what happened was society gave over our political power to government and to political parties. And it's time to reclaim that, time to go back into community and ask ourselves, what are we going to do to set the agenda for the 2024 elections, to tell the politicians what we want and what we won't stand for, and also to start raising our hands as people who've never been in political parties to show them how it's done.
Thank you, Tessa, for joining us. It's been a great pleasure. Let's hear from you, Prof, as you give us your closing comments.
I fully agree with Tessa. Yes, it's high time now that we preach and we also demand a people-centered democracy. You see, because democracy will only work for the benefit of citizens if it's people-centered. Public participation, dialogic engagement is going to be very important. We need to talk to our politicians and ask them tough questions.
On that one, Prof, I'd like to thank you very much for joining us. It was a great pleasure having you. A-teamers, it's a time for us to get ready for the next conversation, but we're going to do so in song.